Welcome to the Rider Report podcast. I'm your host, Mark Smith, and with me is our CFL insider, Matt Sheridan, who I imagine is a pretty happy guy. Matt, you played most of your career in the CFL with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, and they have a Grey Cup championship for the first time in three decades. 33-12 win over the Hamilton Tiger Cats in the Grey Cup, and they have a title in Winnipeg again, I guess. What do you think about the Bombers being champions?
It was a great win for that team, a great culmination for that organization of a number of years of work and investment. I know that the fans and the guys on the roster are ecstatic, and the people who watch the game, I'm sure there's going to be there were naysayers who would have liked to have seen a closer contest, but I think this game showed definitively that Winnipeg was the right team to win, because they came out and, I mean, this was about as emphatic a win as I've ever seen or experienced. Alexander picked the ball off and there was only 62 seconds off the clock from when the game started. And then, it was, Jefferson with a strip sack and Big Hill recovers it. And that's only with 3.5 minutes off the clock. So Winnipeg's D coming out, setting the tone, really kind of epitomizing that old adage that, offenses put bums in the seats, but defenses win championships. And I recall last week saying something about the challenge being up to Richie Hall to come up with a defensive game plan that not only essentially neutralized Addison and Banks, but, I mean, let's be honest, this is playoff football, and it's an entirely different creature. And Dane Evans, for all of the success that he had this year leading Hamilton to the league's best record, doesn't have any playoff experience. And the prospect of there not being a tomorrow and this being the championship game, Hamilton had 8 turnovers. Half of that is reason enough to win a regular season game, let alone the championship. So, as good as Winnipeg was, Hamilton didn't really have a whole lot of fight in my mind. They couldn't quite overcome everything that Winnipeg was bringing to the table.
Yeah, like you said, with the pick by Alexander and the fumble recovery or strip sack by Willie Jefferson right away off the top, it just seemed like, Winnipeg came out on a mission and got that quick start and then really never looked back after that. Andrew Harris did what Andrew Harris does, 134 yards. On the ground, 35 yards receiving, 2 touchdowns. He allowed them to control the ball and control the game from there on out as well.
It was a phenomenal game plan to witness. I mean, ideally, when you are controlling the clock and able to seemingly move the ball at will, you'd like to think that you're going to culminate with a touchdown every drive, but that's not necessarily reasonable. And, for the coaching staff to recognize that, and, if we had to create an adage for this game, I'd call it lost by 1,000 field goals, because it seemed like Medlock was out there. Every time I looked up at the screen or turned my head and looked back, there's Medlock out there kicking a field goal from 40 yards. And we've talked endlessly all year about the value of special teams, and even more so when you go into the playoffs. To have a guy like Medlock, who consistently throughout the season has been contributing and in some cases winning games, to put up 6 field goals. The one he did miss was from 48, but the point is to add to the total of points on the scoreboard. And if that means kicking a field goal instead of scoring a touchdown, well then, I mean, when you're already up, you're just piling on. You don't want to give up any kind of momentum whatsoever. And I don't know if Hamilton ever had any, but it was round, in my opinion, Mark. Like, this was just a quite frankly, a good old-fashioned shit-kicking across the board. Statistically, offense, defense, special teams. Dadrick Hansen. Like, that was one of the most dominant special teams plays of football plays I've ever seen. To pick your guy up and throw him into the returner is total beast mode. It was one of the sickest football plays I've ever seen. And I think one of the things that really helps Winnipeg offensively is the buy-in from everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, you attest to this. How often do you see football teams, when they run the football, the wide receivers don't do a damn thing? They stand around and spectate.
What, you mean they're pretending to block isn't actually blocking?
when you're holding shoulders with the other guy and looking over your shoulder to make sure you don't get run up on, I'm not too sure I would call that actively blocking.
Yeah.
Winnipeg is a different story. These guys are pushing hard. The receivers blocking downfield has been phenomenal all year, and there was one play in particular that for me was emblematic of kind of the style of play that Winnipeg's offense has been demonstrating. There was Harris had a run at about 8 minutes in the fourth quarter, and he shakes a couple of tackles and goes downfield, and at the end of it, he's dragging a couple of guys, and who comes busting in? You expect the O-lineman. You've seen that all game. You've seen the boy all season. You've seen the big boys rumbling downfield and, you know, piling on, trying to push. Well, here comes Stanley Bryan finishing a guy over the pile. And then Darvin Adams, the same thing. Like, manhandling, dominating a defender, pushing him over the pile and driving him into the ground. Everybody's buying in on that run game, and it helps a guy like Harris, who is already so accomplished and has so many tools, when you've got some help when you're running downfield. And I thought it just gave me kind of goosebumps, because you love to see the big boys rumbling downfield, and then when you see the skinny guys doing the same thing, it's kind of heartwarming as an older lineman.
For sure. For Hamilton, they finished first in the regular season. Come up a bit short in the championship game. What does this kind of do for them? How big of a loss is that, or how much is that loss going to sting?
It's always a sting when you lose the championship game. You know, it's professional sports. I don't know if there's a whole lot of moral victories anymore, but they don't have anything to hang their heads about. Hamilton had a phenomenal season. Despite the fact they lost Masoli early on, what a great find Dane Evans is, and Orlando Steinauer and his staff did a great job of rallying everybody behind their cause and keeping everybody pushing forward. Emergence of some great talent. I haven't heard anything about the extent of Brandon Banks' leg injury, but that definitely played a big role in Hamilton not having any kind of opportunity to fight back, because that was one of Dane Evans's favorite targets all season and during the game until he got hurt. There's going to be some huge turnover. You look at the list of free agents that are coming up this year, and there's some coaching vacancies. So Hamilton, there's been talk of their offensive coordinator, Tommy Condell, being up for a couple of positions potentially, depending on who ends up where. So one thing you can be certain of in the CFL is that there will be some shakeup over the course of the offseason. It's just a question of how much.
Let's talk about Winnipeg again. You talked a bit about it off the top, but you played in Winnipeg. You know what the city's like. How important is this win to their fan base to have a Grey Cup title now under their name?
Can't put words to it. It's an immense amount of validation. As you mentioned, they haven't had a Grey Cup victory since 1990, back in the glory days. the whole city, the whole province, all of the stakeholders, and made big investments years ago with the new stadium and bringing in a particular triumvirate of control and decision making within the organization. And by that, I mean general manager Kyle Walters, CEO Wade Miller, and head coach Mike O'Shea, all Canadians, all former players themselves, bringing that unique perspective and unique formula to building success. So that was validation for everybody that struggled and fought through that process. I also thought another, it was a great ending for Caleros. What a great subplot for the year. Four University of Manitoba alumni in the game, five hometown guys. Andrew Harris is that fifth guy. Andrew is one of those few guys who did not play college football, went directly to the CFL from the junior ranks. And the fact that Dembski and Harris played at the same high school together in Winnipeg, it was, you know, all these little subplots, little connections that, you know, really endear the team and their season and their efforts to the local community and the grassroots football in Manitoba.
Yeah, it was, I think, a pretty special win. You could just see at the parade how much the team was enjoying it and the fans were enjoying it. I think it was a pretty special moment for that city. And say what you will about the Riders and the Bombers and their rivalry, I think it's good for the CFL that the Bombers have a title and will maybe invigorate that fan base a bit more too.
Absolutely. That's a great point. And, you know, bringing a championship to a city is always, you know, an injection of adrenaline and life and hope and optimism and all of those great things. So, you know, the Bombers and the city of Winnipeg will hopefully be able to ride that wave of emotion and good spirits through the holidays and into the new year. And hopefully Winnipeg is able to hang on to some of their key free agents and keep some consistency. And next year, hopefully have enough pieces still in place to be able to try and replicate that performance.
Well, you mentioned free agents, and that's where we're going next. The off season is here, and the CFL released their list of free agents today. The Riders, in particular, have 32 free agents, whereas the Winnipeg Blue Bombers have a few less, but they got some pretty important ones on there. Darvin Adams, Zach Claros, Willie Jefferson, just to name a few, as well as Chris Strebler is a free agent. So some big pieces there for the Bombers. If they want to try to repeat, they need to re-sign some of those guys. And then the Riders with 32 guys as free agents, so pretty much their entire front seven from their defense or free agents going into the off season. So there could be a lot of change going on around the CFL this off season.
Well, I would go so far as to say could is not accurate, and that there will be. And compounding that is all of the movement with the coaching staffs this year. And, you know, we're looking at vacancies as of today, vacancies in Ottawa, BC, and Edmonton, Kahari extended in Montreal. So there's, you know, all kinds of little machinations going on, you know, like Pete Costanza, the receiver coach for Calgary, has informed them he's not going to be back. And if you look back his coaching tree, I think he coached with La Police back at, I'm going to butcher this, Wrestler Polytechnic in New York State or somewhere like that. So my guess is Pete's been talking to Lapo, and Lapo's in line for a head coaching job, and he's going to bring Pete on staff somewhere. And, you know, the XFL is looking at Jamie Elizondo from the Eskimos. They want him to be involved with one of their teams, and they got blocked. And then the fun just keeps continuing. I think we're seeing the emergence of a 24/7, 365 news on the CFL, much like the NFL did a couple of years ago.
Yeah. What do you think about the 1-year contracts in the CFL and how much change that is leading to season to season right now, with teams having 30 free agents and a lot of starters that could leave. Is that good or is that bad for the league?
For the league, it's horrible. It's horrible. You're striving every year. You're already facing a deficit. We've talked about one of the fundamental differences in the CFL and the NFL is there's no off-season workouts in the CFL. So you're really counting on training camp to be the crucible in which guys gel and come together and figure out how to work as a unit. And that roster is constantly churning over until Labor Day when the NFL makes their cuts. And then you have guys maybe solidified without injury, hopefully, knock on wood, for a couple of months, and then they're free agents again. It introduces an element of instability and uncertainty that I don't think is necessary and is certainly less than ideal. You end up spinning your wheels and revisiting things. If you could get guys to commit, even for 2 or 3 years, then I think it makes things a lot easier. But that's assuming that the model of consistency is what you're looking for. If you want something new and exciting, and depending on where you view it from, maybe a whole lot of frustration and repetition, then the CFL is where it's at, because there's going to be a huge amount of turnover, and there's a lot of recycling of players and guys as you go to teams where the coaches or the system or they know you or whatever it may be. But there's very, very little consistency, and in terms of competition and the average level of play, I don't think it's good.
For sure, yeah, I agree. It makes it tough, like you said, with not a lot of off season time to work with, and then new guys coming in and out every year. It may definitely makes it hard on those teams to build consistency, and kind of hurts the product, I think, early in the season when teams are still trying to figure things out with a short preseason and all that. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how the league handles all these players on the market and where they all end up. That makes it for exciting, but yeah, it definitely might hurt the product on the field. Let's talk coaches. You mentioned a little bit Jason Moss out this week now in Edmonton. We have the opening in BC as well as Ottawa. It sounds like Rick Campbell could be one of the front runners in Edmonton. What would you think of that going there? And where do you think Jason Moss goes next?
Those are all good questions. This is, assuming these guys are looking for other head coaching jobs in the CFL, there's a long history and precedence of guys being scooped up late in the process by other organizations at other levels, see Chris Jones, or U.S. college programs or what have you. It's, heck, I remember a story from the 90s of one of the positional coaches from the Bombers quitting 3 days before camp because he got a job at a high school in California. So it's tough. It's really tough to say. I don't know if Jason Moss would fit in BC with Ed Hervey. Somehow I think that those two might be like oil and vinegar, perhaps. Rick Campbell to Edmonton, everyone makes that natural assumption because of his association to that organization. Of course, his dad, Hugh Campbell, a legendary CFL coach who won multiple championships with the Eskimos back in the late 70s and 80s and has coached there. That would be an easy decision, I think, for Brock Sunderland, the GM in Edmonton, to make, to bring Rick back into the fold there. And of course, reunite him with Trevor Harris. But that might be a little bit of a tricky thing too, because if all media reports are to be believed, there's some potential friction about the way things went down in Ottawa when Trevor left last year. So who knows? Big X factor is Mike O'Shea in Winnipeg. Are they going to keep Chamberlain in Toronto? Is Pinball just kind of sitting and waiting to see what happens? You know, Corey's got another year on his contract there, and as I have made no secret about, I am far from a fan of his in any way, shape, or form, and wholeheartedly believe they should get rid of him as soon as possible. But, you know, all of these things will play out in due course.
Yeah. It's going to be an interesting offseason. Like you said, the news cycle I don't think is going to stop in the CFL this offseason. So it should be fun, and it's been a fun season so far. What was your highlight of the 2019 CFL season, excluding, let's say, the Bombers winning the Grey Cup, because I knew that would be number one?
Highlight? I just think it's a great story with Hamilton. You know, we talked endlessly, repeatedly about the dynamic and the nature of that quarterback, the backup quarterback position in the CFL, the absolute necessity of having somebody accomplished in season. And we talk and lament endlessly about the woes that teams have because their backups are not quite up to par and the reasons behind that. And then Hamilton finds a diamond in the rough. They got a guy who can, after a couple of weeks of seasoning, can run the offense, can execute, and quite frankly throws that football faster than anybody I have seen throw it in a long time. Dane Evans is a rising star in this league, and it was a great, great story to see him mature and really get into the groove with that offense and lead Hamilton to the record that they had.
Yeah, it was definitely interesting to watch. They were off to such a good start, and then Masoli goes down, and they never really missed a beat. So that's a good one. I enjoyed that. I think the battle in the West was my favorite part. It's tight every year, but just those three teams, Calgary, Saskatchewan, and Winnipeg, moved around in that division so much throughout the year, and then the Riders end up getting the home playoff game. Can't finish the job against Winnipeg, but it was quite the ride in the West all season long. So I think that was my highlight.
Any personal satisfaction on your part, Mark, watching Calgary not quite achieve what everybody expected that they would?
Oh, I always will revel in the fact that Calgary doesn't do it, doesn't get into a Grey Cup game. So yeah, definitely nice to see that as well.
I think another great story, and I'm going to the feel good ones, is Montreal, you know, yeah, as well. You know, there's these stories of rejuvenation and rebirth out East this year after drama and intrigue and tribulation early in the season, to see Kahari step into the breach and have as much success as he did and be rewarded. And, you know, I started that idea that the legend of Kahari Jones is being built this year and in the coming seasons as he takes that Montreal organization. And who better to lead it back to legitimacy than a former quarterback, considering the challenges and the woes that organization has had at that position over the last 5 years?
Yeah, I would agree. And then and in Montreal too, Vernon Adams Jr. finding a spot and getting his opportunity and taking full advantage too. He'd bounced around the league a little bit, and he took full advantage of all the opportunities that Kahari Jones gave to him. And they seem like they're going to be a good duo there for the next few years.
Let's hope so, as long as they can keep everybody on board and keep the roster consistent. Yes.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see about that. That's going to be the question all off season. Yeah, it's been another fun year doing the podcast with you, Matt. Thanks for sitting down with us throughout the season.
Thank you for having me.
You can find the podcast, as always, at on iTunes, and we'll see you next year here at the Rider Report podcast. Thanks.